a lot of people are relying upon AI now, ChatGPT, to say, hey, this is who I'm talking to. This is the scenario. Help me come up with some questions. I've tried that a couple of times, and it actually does help a little bit. You can't ask the questions verbatim, though. And this is for all the young ones out there. They're like, well, I'm going to go ahead and use this. You can't use that verbatim. It's a guideline. Yes. It's like, okay, do you really want to ask something out of the ordinary? Well, here's something. And then you have to research it yourself. You can't trust everything you see.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of The Dinfos Way. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at Dinfos. Joining me today, I am proud to say, is radio host Amelia Ryersey from WIYY-FM, better known as 98 Rock here in Baltimore. She's been an on-air personality at the station for over two decades, and her time includes co-hosting the coveted and highly rated morning show and featuring nonprofit organizations on her public affairs program, Maryland Perspectives. She's here today to talk about her career, the practicalities of running a radio show, and advice for DJs and hosts looking to be the best they can be on the air. Amelia, thank you for joining us.
Are you kidding me? Thanks for having me, Jack.
I am just so excited. I've been listening to you for 20 years. I was in the Navy for a little bit, so I may be from Baltimore, but I haven't been here forever. But since you were on the morning show, I listened to you in the afternoons. I've been listening to you forever. So the fact that you're here is just amazing to us. Thank you for being in that chair. We appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Anything you'd like to ask. I need to know some secrets, some military secrets. That's why I'm here.
They warned us ahead of time that you might ask that, so we went through a little bit of a course. We had a couple hours worth of training. I think we're going to be safe today.
Very good.
I'm really sad that you're retiring. I mean, I hate to bring that up first thing, but you're leaving the airwaves. Yeah.
So I've done radio for 30 years total.
Gosh.
I graduated from New Mexico State University in 1996. My first job was in Taos, New Mexico at the very first solar-powered radio station, which is so very Taos. Yeah. And then I moved down around the country for a long time. It took about 7 or 8 years, but I always knew, because I'm from Maryland, born and raised in Laurel, just outside of Fort Meade. And I knew I wanted to come back to 98 Rock. I grew up on Sarah Fleischer. I grew up on Robin Quivers on DC 101.
Yeah, most people don't remember that's where she started.
Yeah, and with Howard Stern, obviously, and that was my high school listening. I remember sitting around with a boombox and having the cassette tape on pause, right, so I could catch all of my favorite songs and unpause it and that kind of thing. And that kind of led into it. My mother actually worked for Arbitron, which used to be based in Laurel, Maryland. My very first job was being one of those telemarketers, the interviewer. It's like, hey, do you want to tell everybody what your favorite radio station is? And then we'd send them diaries and they'd fill them out for ratings purposes. So then I eventually went to college, got the jobs, and then moved back here to Baltimore in 2003. This is after 7 years of traveling around the country and being what Stern used to call the radio gypsies. And I was the last of the radio gypsies because it's really, really hard to do that today. Yeah. And I've done every shift at 98 Rock as well when I first walked in the door at 2003. So definitely would love to give some tips and tricks like you were talking about.
What was it like doing every single shift? I mean, again, you've done everything from the morning show to afternoons to overnights. I mean, mm-hmm. What's it like being the person who can do everything?
Well, each shift definitely comes with its own duties, like activities that you have to kind of do to prep for the show that day. When I was a part-timer, that was basically just cutting my teeth, right, and getting my foot in the door. At that time, I knew that everybody that worked for 98 Rock, because it's such a great company, it's Hearst that owns it. It's one of only two radio stations that Hearst owns. It's not one of those big cluster deals like Clear Channel or Entercom or any of those kinds of businesses. So when I did the part-time, I knew nobody was going to leave, so that's when I had to leave and travel around and then come back. My overnight experiences were great because nobody's listening. So when you made a mistake, it didn't like hurt so much, right? Like, oh no, Amelia, my mother heard that. She's going to be so disappointed, you know, that kind of a thing. So when I came back in 2003, they put myself with my old co-host on at night. And it was just a great way for us to get a chemistry, figure out what we wanted to do, figure out what we wanted to talk about, and still be able to play music and not talk a whole lot, which is kind of my favorite thing. I don't want to talk about myself ad nauseum, which seems to be what a lot of these talk shows are about. I'd rather talk about the music. That's why I signed up for radio. I want to play the music. I want to turn people onto bands. I want to go to the shows. I want to get the free shirts. You know, I want to get the free music, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, from overnights completely different to the night show even more different to the afternoon show, which when they put us on there for the first time, that was 2005, I guess. That's when they first started introducing talk, right? Because you remember Don and Mike out of DC?
Yeah.
They had put them on across the street from us, and which, you know, is a vernacular of they were put on another radio station that we were competing against. So they came on, and then our boss at the time knew, was like, well, I need something that's going to compete with them. Let me take my talk show at night, which isn't really a talk show, give them more space to talk. And they already had the chemistry built. So then we really had to figure out what that big shotgun blast is, right? You know, how many people can we reach with the things that we're talking about? Because if you really make it niche, you're only going to get a very small portion of the audience, because they'll flip around and find something else, right? So that's when I learned, okay, things that are really, really popular, trying to think of something like American Idol. Mm-hmm. Can't stand that show. Hate it. I hate what it's done to the music industry, blah, blah, blah. So they were like, well, you got to have to talk about it if you want to do this big shotgun blast. And I was like, all right, I'll talk about it. But when I talked about it, it was always in horrible terms. You know, not like completely taking it out, but, you know, constructive criticisms that were very tongue-in-cheek at that time,
sure.
Right? So I learned about doing that and talking about things you don't necessarily really want to talk about. When they moved us to the morning show, that's when it really, I was able to go, okay, well, I know how to talk about something that I don't like and not actually kind of poop all over it either, you know? Because when you do that, you make people angry. You're like, oh, that band sucks. If you go on the air and take out the music that you're actually playing, it makes people angry. And I'm not there to make people angry, you know? Morning show, the hours were different, so that was tough. Working with other people is really tough too, even when you get that chemistry. The morning show that I did, towards the end of it, it kind of fell apart because one of our members was having some big challenges in their life. And it really started to reflect in what was going out over the air. So I was able, and because of my DJing experience and not just being a talk show host, they were able to use me as a utility player while they were moving things around inside the station. And that's my biggest advice to anybody that's getting into radio. You have to learn everything, because now you're tasked with doing two or three jobs that used to just be one person back in the day.
Yeah.
And now, like, our promotions person is not only doing promotional stuff, they get one assistant, but they also have to do all the digital components. And there's way more of that. I remember my boss looking at me while we were in a morning show meeting, holding up his phone. This was back in 2007, maybe 2008. Held up his phone. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, this is where radio is going, pointing to his phone. And he was absolutely correct, because it was all about streaming now. It's all about video now, you know, and it just keeps kind of moving faster and faster towards all of that.
So what was it like going from, say, like the relatively calm environment of an afternoon show at a rock station to the raucousness that was that morning show? Because people may not know the markets and sort of how it works, but Baltimore is a 25 or a 26 market, and the morning show here became one of the biggest in the country, I'm fairly certain from what I remember. So what was that kind of like, having that notoriety and
yeah. Well, when you go to the grocery store, hey, it's Amelia from 98 Rock. I'm like, dude, leave me alone. Can't you tell I'm not in a very good mood right now? That's sort of my pat answer for that. But walking around and always being noticed. I remember getting on a plane, going on vacation, and this guy just came running up. Amelia, how are you? It feels great. It's awesome. I'm so glad people are listening. But there's no way that I would want to the 10th degree is somebody on television, right? A YouTuber today probably has to go through that a lot now. Once I wasn't on the morning show anymore, that kind of stopped. Every now and then I'll get a, hey, Amelia, I listen to you all the time kind of a thing. But they're not running up. They're not trying to take pictures and do that kind of a thing. it's funny. Somebody asked me that a long time ago too, right when it ended. And I was like, it was a tough adjustment to come off of that morning show and move back to afternoon drive and eventually back to middays. It was a tough adjustment when it came to the limelight because there's a lot of it. But there's also a lot of pressure that comes along with that. Ratings, you've got to get them. You are doing so much extra behind the scenes, right? And it's even more so now with all of the video, right? Like to our morning show now, they do with those cameras that are in studio, they actually edit that up. And it's now a show that is on TV 11 out of Baltimore right after Saturday Night Live. And it's sort of a best of for them, right? That's a lot of pressure. And that's also getting more eyeballs on you that don't necessarily listen to 98 Rock. So they are really, it's like a bright beam of lime right now. It's not just, you know, hey, I listen to you. It's more like, wow, I saw you do this. I saw you do that. And they get these preconceived notions of who you are, right? Because of the things you talk about. Because a lot of that stuff is, you know, it's honest, some of it, but some of it's not, you
You're
know?
Playing a character and people forget
that. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I guess I want to dive a little deeper on this because when our students graduate and they become, you know, service members out there in the field and they're doing radio at AFNs and they're doing news on social media, they become pseudo famous and they become the face of their institution or their installation. And what tips would you give to somebody who's dealing with that sort of introduction to that level of fame for the first time?
The first couple of months are going to be great. You're going to love it. But then when you're in the middle of doing something and you've got to be somewhere, you've got to do something and somebody stops you, you kind of have to stop. You really do. You have to go, hey, thanks so much for listening. You have to give them a minute of your time. There's somebody I know, I won't name them. We call it the turn and burn, where they'll give them some time. Hi, how are you? Let's take a picture together. They'll compliment them on something that they're wearing, right? So say, I see you, I notice you. And they're like, well, it was great. Thanks, bye. And then they just turn around and leave because you really aren't obligated to spend 3 hours with somebody to talk with them. And really all they're asking is just a hi, how are you? And I love what you do, right? So you should always take the time. Always. Even if you're on your way somewhere and you're in a hurry, 2 minutes out of your day isn't going to hurt you.
For real. I agree with that. What does show prep sort of look like for you nowadays? And how has it kind of changed over time? Because obviously we used to have records and CDs back in the day, and now sure. Mr. Computer runs everything for us. So what's that look like?
Right. So for when you're working for a commercial radio station, you don't pick any of the music. All of that is already pre-done for you, and it's done a day or two in advance. You're not adding songs, right? But you have to find the information about all of this that's maybe compelling, that's different than what everybody else is talking about, because especially in the middays, the 10 to 2 shift that I'm doing, the morning show is talking about just about everything. The afternoon show that's going on after me is talking about everything. So I've got to put my thumbprint on it and try and find information that nobody else is really going to talk about. So in the morning when I wake up, I do all of my show prep online, actually. I do a blog on our website that I put together myself. And basically, it's like a one line. This is happening with this band. And there's a link that you can click on and go look at stuff for yourself. So then all of that's done probably by 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. Get ready to go to work. By the time I sit down in the chair in the studio and I'm ready to do my show, I already know all of the stories I want to talk about. I've already read everything I want to talk about, and I've digested it a little bit, and then I try to come up with some kind of angle on it that's me, right? That's my personality, that I think my listeners might be interested in. And it's got to be quick. It's got to be in and out. When my old boss came in, he said something to me that kind of punched me in the face a little bit, and I wasn't too happy about it at the time. He says, I need you to talk in 30 seconds or less. Less is better. And I was like, well, how am I going to do that? What are you telling me to shut up? I still need to have some content and I still need to be compelling. And to do it in 30 seconds is really, really hard. So I don't necessarily do it in 30 seconds, but I definitely talk in less than a minute. So I try to lead. Oh, God, what's the guy's name? There's an old timey radio guy. And he's like, and that's the rest
Paul
of
Paul Harvey?
Yes. Yeah. And Paul Harvey was great at that. He's like, he wouldn't tell you everything. He would make you hungry for a little bit more. So that's kind of how I approach that. So Shinedown's got a new album coming out, right? For example, they're a band, if you're not familiar with Shinedown. Maybe the lead singer did something really, really cool. He donated $100,000 to a charity. I'm looking up the charity. I'm finding out what that is. I'm trying to figure out a way that that's going to relate to Baltimore. How is that going to help my listener here in Maryland? And then I'll find out all of that extra information, and then I'll put it together in a less than minute break. And then that's that. Now, if it's in between songs, it's even shorter than that. And I'm like, and I always kind of end with, you know, if you want to learn more about that, you want to read more about that, go to our website, go to our mobile app, or go to our Facebook page, that kind of a thing. And it's actually a great way to advertise all of those things to our listeners to find out everything else that the station is doing. And it's also, I don't have to give all the information out. I just got to give the bits that are interesting. And that's kind of how I prep my show every day.
How do you stay energetic, upbeat, so excited to be there every single day with at least your voice?
So the first thing my radio teachers told me, because I did take some classes in college, a smile on your face is a smile in your voice. That kind of a thing. And after, you know, 30 years of radio, I know the inflections and all of that. I have had to go in, and I've gotten news that friends have died while I was doing my air shift. And that's a hard one, you know? So I'm crying behind the scenes, but I open that mic and thank God it's 30 seconds or 45 seconds because I can hold it together, get back into it, and then come back out and wipe my eyeballs, you know, that kind of a thing. Sometimes I'm not. And I think that radio today and the Sterns of the world have helped out with that. You can be honest. If you're sad, you can talk about it. It's actually, you know, it's not frowned upon like it was. Mental health is a big deal now. As long as you don't get too morose about it, right? Or you're not trying to be a complete Debbie Downer. But like, hey, this happened to me today and I'm, you know, bear with me. But here's a song that helps me through my day. This one's helping me out today. And I kind of find the angle through music, because music is not only a great unifier, especially today, it's also a great emotional outlet. When you're happy, you put a song on. When you're sad, you put a song on. You know, if you want to build a bridge with somebody that maybe you want to talk more with, hey, do you like this band, right? Or complete strangers walking down the road, they've got your favorite band on their t-shirt. That's a great icebreaker. Let me talk to you about this band. I love that band too. So that's sort of the way that I approach the happiness levels on the air. And sometimes it's real, and actually most of the time it's real, and sometimes I kind of have to cover it up a little bit if I'm really, really sad.
When you do radio, when you do the morning show, you're interviewing a ton of people, right? And sometimes you have time to prep, sometimes you don't. Sometimes they go off the rails. Sometimes they go really well.
Yeah.
If you could share a story or two, I'd appreciate it. But also tell us a little bit about how your interview skills have improved and evolved over time.
So I would always go into an interview, especially early in my career, of, you know, I got to ask the best questions. You know, I've got to be the best interview I could possibly be. And yes, you should have that in the back of your mind. But you also have to realize that these bands are talking to all of these radio stations all across the country, and they're just trying to get in, get out. They want to promote their new music, and that's that. So you kind of have to go into it without the gotcha questions, without digging too deep, because not only are you trying to connect with the artist that you're talking to, you want to make sure it's interesting to listen to for the listeners. And that really is the fine line. Just recently, actually, for one of the Amelia's Last Ride deals, because I'm about to retire, we had a band come in called The Warning, and they're three sisters out of Mexico. Love them. Seen them four times live. And my boss was kind enough to go, well, we're going to bring them in and have them do a special acoustic show. And you're going to interview them. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I also had to interview them on stage in front of a live audience, live on the air. That was like one of my biggest challenges in my entire career.
Yeah.
And to get up there, you know, I'm holding the paper and my hands are shaking a little bit. And I felt like a rookie all of a sudden. I felt like, wow. So to prep for that interview, you know, I wanted to ask some kind of off the cuff questions just because they're sisters, right? They're bigger in Mexico than they are in the US. So when you kind of figure out the angle that you're taking to talk to these people and still be able to promote what they're talking. You know, they got a new album coming out. So, of course, that was my first question, was when's it coming out, that kind of a thing. To kind of do that. So they're sisters. What did they fight about? You know, that kind of a thing. A lot of people are relying upon AI now, ChatGPT, to say, hey, this is who I'm talking to. This is the scenario. Help me come up with some questions. I've tried that a couple of times, and it actually does help a little bit. You can't ask the questions verbatim, though. And this is for all the young ones out there. They're like, well, I'm going to go ahead and use this. You can't use that verbatim. It's a guideline. Yes. It's like, okay, do you really want to ask something out of the ordinary? Well, here's something. And then you have to research it yourself. You can't trust everything you see, because a lot of times, in fact, there's a great bit on an old radio station out of California, and it was through Wikipedia, true or not. And so that was their thing. They would ask artists, like, is this true? This is on Wikipedia. And the same thing can be said about ChatGPT. Sure, they're scouring the whole internet, but the stuff that they're bringing back to you, you've got to vet. You've got to, because you don't want to be in front of a live audience, right, with a band in front of you, and make that mistake of asking a question where nobody understands, like, well, what are you talking about? That's not true. Where'd you get that information from? That's really embarrassing. Really, really embarrassing. So for me, because I was a fan of the band, I just asked fan questions and something that a fan would want to know. And it went fairly well. I was actually pretty proud of myself. For other artists, it's been a while since I've really had to sit down and do a hardcore interview, because that's especially in the middays. So for anybody that wants to do the afternoon drive or the morning drive, you've got to do a lot of interviews, right? A lot of interviews. And there are some people that thrive off of that, and some people that aren't into it. Radio for that. They're into it more for, you know, the free stuff, or they want to be the star. They want to be in the limelight, that kind of deal. I still love talking to the bands. I get nervous every time because I don't want to embarrass them. I don't want to embarrass myself, and I want it to be good for the listener. So as long as you still care, you know, that's a really big thing. Sometimes I look around, I'm like, I don't think you really care about this anymore.
You know, our students in the military have it so interesting, because one day they could interview, you know, some low-level local band from Towson, Maryland at their studio. And then the next day, because of the USO tours in town, they interview Lady Gaga.
Right? Oh, right.
So it you just never know, right? Mm-hmm. And that ability to prepare, that ability to be ready to go, to mm-hmm. hopefully not be terrified of your idol and all of their bodyguards that wander into your studio, is all really important, right? And something that they have to prepare for at a really, really young age.
Yes.
So what do you do when things go sideways? What do you do when an interview goes bad, or when there's an on-air mistake that you have to dump out?
That's never happened.
No, of course not. No, never. We don't make mistakes.
Trying to think of anything that's, you know, I remember, like, Henry Rollins has hung up on people before.
Henry Rollins, people forget, he had the best, was it a radio show? I don't know.
He did out in California. Yeah. He did like a music intensive show, but, he worked in punk for years and years and years. Great writer. He does spoken word tours now too. When you step to him, you have to know what you're talking about. He just doesn't put up with idiots. But most artists are really very sweet, like Shinedown, right? I've asked Brent a really, really dumb question, and it kind of took him aback a little bit, because he lost a lot of weight, right? He lost a lot of weight. Looks fantastic. And I was like, so, do you ever miss Fat Brent? And he was like, And this is during COVID, right? And so we were doing the whole online deal. And there was a couple other of my radio people that were with me from 98 Rock. And he kind of looked at me and kind of leaned back a little bit. And of course, my coworker chopped in. He's like, oh, you know, and try to kind of smooth it over a little bit. So it helped to have somebody else in the room. So that's number one. And number two, he was like, he was okay with it. He's like, oh, okay, I see what you're saying. It's like, hey, every now and then a piece of cherry pie is kind of nice, you know. So he answered the question, but I kind of knew, I kind of overstepped the line a little bit. So I haven't had an artist get really mad at me for anything stupid. And if they don't want to answer the question, they won't. They'll either say something, you know, like, whatever, you know, something along those lines. And then you just move to the next one. You know, if they're not into it, you can tell. After you've done it a couple times, if they don't want to answer that question, okay, well, and you kind of have to go around. That's why you should always have more questions than you're going to ask, because then maybe you can kind of relate that to something else and bring them back around, right? And that's really the trick of a really good interviewer. Stern wasn't a very good interviewer when he first started. He was horrible. And then after he got therapy and he learned what a psychologist or a therapist does on a couch, he started using those tactics. But only he can get away with that, because that's personal. When you're asking really, really personal questions, you should never do that, especially with an artist you've never talked to before. Maybe if it's your third or fourth interview with that person, which there are some jocks that have relationships, you know, that way, because they know you're going to come in prepared. Right. And if you talk to somebody a second time and all of a sudden they're like, wow, this person is really good at what they do, they're going to want to come back and talk to you. And you can start asking those personal questions, you know, and you should always preface it like, hey, if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to, that kind of a thing. And they appreciate that kind of thing.
You know, it's interesting because those interviews are so surface level, right? Like if you're interviewing, you know, a celebrity at 7 o'clock in the morning who's there to talk about his new TV show, it's very dependent upon the host or the DJ to be a good interviewer, to make that interesting. Because it's like you said, that's the 12th morning show they've done that morning already. They're tired. It's up to the DJ to make it good. And I think that's why you and the DJs at your radio station are so good at what they do, and why their ratings are so consistently good. Because the interviews and the discussions and the things that happen outside of the music are so compelling and interesting, and done by compelling and interesting people. And not everybody has that luxury.
No, they don't. I want to say my most favorite interview was Bryan Cranston. Obviously the father of Malcolm in the Middle, and also Breaking Bad, of course, he was Walter. I forgot his alter ego's name. He came up and sat in on our morning show and didn't leave and wanted to hang out all morning long. And I was like, well, that's a coup. Right, because he had all these other interviews. Yeah. Granted, you know, the promoter person is in the back going, he's got to go. And then, you know, we pop off with another great question, or, you know, talking to him about stuff that he really, really enjoys. And he wants to hang out and talk, right? Because he doesn't want to just go do another boring interview, you know. I don't know what we did, but for some reason, he took a shine to us. I was a huge Breaking Bad fan at that time and knew that they were going to win an Emmy. Right. I just knew it. And I told him that. And then next thing you know, we're just going back and forth, back and forth. You can only do so many compliments, though. If you blow too much sunshine, they're going to be like, OK, you know, you don't want to be too much of a geek about it. You don't want to be, you know, so gushing. You know, you want to ask them real questions and treat them like a human being, too. That's the other part of that.
For sure. I think everybody respects that more. Because that's who we all are, is just human beings at the end of the day. And I think that makes the best interviews, too.
Yeah.
When you remember that, those real scripted things, they always just come off inauthentic. And I think that your interviews particularly are very authentic. And I think that what makes you so good as an interviewer.
Oh, thanks.
You just said don't blow smoke. And here I am giving you compliments. Like, well, I got to think of something negative to tell you.
Well, being on the same station for a long time, you know, it's I get some negative. I do. You know, you get the good and the bad.
Since you brought it up, it's a good segue. And you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. See, another tip I just learned from you. But if you'd like to, if enough time has passed, can you talk a little bit about what happened to the morning show and how it kind of fell apart and sort of went sideways?
Yeah, it, you know, like I said, there's a lot of pressure involved with the morning show, and everybody's got to be on the same page, and you've got to work in tandem, right?
Not to interrupt, but the show, for anyone who doesn't know, it was called Mickey, Amelia, and Spiegel.
Yeah, yeah. And that was, I think we were on the air for, I want to say it was maybe 5 years, something like that. It wasn't very long.
It was long enough. It felt like it was epic.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Mickey and I were together for 10 years. And so, like I said, we started at night, right? Got the chemistry. They moved us to afternoons, learned what worked and what didn't work. Because, boy, we had some really bad breaks. There's one, it was the two-faced cat. I'll just leave it at that. And I remember Mickey going, well, that's our career over there floating in the bay. And I'm like, yeah, that was a bad joke. So we learned. So by the time we got to the morning show, all cylinders were pumping. We were all on board. We were all working in tandem, wanting to do the best we could. And then my co-host's life fell apart behind the scenes, and I'm not going to tell any stories about that. And it became abundantly clear that he was having some issues. And so he just kind of backed up and said, I got to go. And we were like, okay. So then we were left with I was still under contract at the time, trying to figure out who's going to take over the morning show. And because of my DJ stuff, and I was like, ooh, I don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning anymore. Yes, I'll do afternoons. That sounds great. And I could work by myself again. And I really enjoy it. I enjoyed still being by myself too.
With it being such a one-man band experience nowadays, especially, is there anything that stands out to you that's especially difficult or even easier about doing it as one person versus a group situation like that?
A lot of it's remaining inspired and wanting to go in there and really do a good show every day, day in, day out. Some days are better than others, obviously, but... you know, and I am. I'm responsible for everything. I'm responsible for how I prep. I'm responsible for all my production behind the scenes. I'm responsible for what comes out of my mouth. And then staying focused, too, because a lot of times I'll be online while I'm on the air, and then I'll look over and there's only like 2 seconds left on a song. I'm like, oh, no, you know, and it makes sure there's no dead air. That's a big one, too. It's easy to get distracted, especially when you're playing a lot of music. So if I'm doing a music block of, you know, 20 minutes with just, you know, pop in, pop out, you can get distracted and trying to not do that because there's nobody else in the studio with you to go, hey, two seconds, you know, 30 seconds, get on the air. You get, you know, that's one thing that is kind of hard on some days, not all days, obviously. And then, you know, also like we talked about earlier, being outside the limelight. So like if I were to walk into a room with all of the other people at 98 Rock, the morning show and the afternoon show, everybody immediately goes to those two first because they're the ones that are talking the most. They're the ones that I think people feel like that's my best friend. That's my companion. That's the person I go to work with every day. Right. And not so much with me. I'm now behind the scenes. Right. I'm at work listening, as they like to call it in radio. I still get some nice people that come up because I've been there for so long. And especially now that I'm retiring, I can't even explain to it. I feel like I'm blushing a little bit because some of the things people have said to me have just been so mind blowing that you don't realize the effect that you have doing. And it doesn't matter if you're in radio or if you're a, you know, as I like to call it, a beltway celebrity. No matter what your job is, no matter what you do in your life, you have an effect on other people, whether it's your coworkers or the product that you're putting out to the consumer. You have some sort of impact on other people's lives, you know, and you should always be focused and stay true to yourself when it comes to that, because that's the best way to make sure the product is good, to make sure that the people you're affecting are happy, right? Or that, you know, want to come up and say thank you, right? I don't care if you're on the radio. I don't care if you're picking up the trash every morning, right? I'm very, very grateful to postal workers, you know, grateful to trash people, sanitation workers. I'm grateful to our military, right? And it shocks me sometimes of, you know, when I see somebody in uniform walking around, that everybody will come up to them and say thank you for your service. And I know that after about 5 to 10 times of hearing that a day, you're like, yeah, okay, thanks. It's not just a platitude, right? So I deal with that with radio, right? I know that somebody is coming up to me and saying something, and maybe it's the same thing I've heard for the last 23 years that I've been at the station, but I know that that person means it and that I had some sort of impact. And that's kind of what keeps me on the straight and narrow. That's what, you know, I remember that, like with the 2 seconds left on the song about to go on the air, I was like, oh yeah, don't let that person down. get on the air and have your stuff together.
So give me some of those tips and tricks. Obviously, we're a schoolhouse. One of the big things we do here is teach new skills. And we have a lot of radio folks out there that are working for AFNs and they're doing radio shows, and some of them are brand new, right? So what are some of those things that they can do to get better? What are some of the mistakes you see new people make? Just whatever you can think about that would help some of those younger folks be better.
air check yourself. Don't wait for somebody else to do that.
Yeah.
Lay down some breaks. Even if you don't have a professional gig, you should be listening to everything that you are doing. That way you can go back and listen to it, because that's not who I want to be. That's sure. not what I want to sound like, right? Before somebody comes at you and says, you need to sound like this. Because if you can figure it out on your own, nobody needs to tell you that. Stay focused, like we were just talking about. You should always prep. You should never open the mic and not know what you're going to say. Even if you're doing long form talk shows, you should know where you're going to begin, know where you're going to end. The middle will work itself out. And especially with radio, you're in the business of time. This isn't like here, we can talk all we want to because it's a podcast. Podcasting and doing radio are two separate animals. When somebody calls podcasting radio, I always say, nope, that's not the case at all. You should, if you can, work in the genre of music, especially if you're going to be a music disc jockey, work in the music that you love. Because if you work in any other genre, say like country, if you're a rock and roll fan or if you're an R&B fan, you're not going to be turned on by that job. It's going to be a job. And you're not going to be able to make that connection to listeners. You're just not going to. The hard part of that, though, is that the jobs just aren't there like they used to be. You can't travel around the country in small markets to try and make it and break it into a big market. Baltimore, I guess, is 23 now.
Oh, cool. We moved up. That's exciting.
Well, it used to be 21. It's actually gone down.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, so we were market. So for people that don't know, markets are how the rating system delineates all of the radio stations across the country. And it's 1 through 200, right? So if you're in a top 10 market, you're in Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles. DC is actually market 8. Baltimore is 21. So we're still top 50 market, which is great because that's kind of where you're aiming for, because that's where the money is, mm-hmm. right? That's and if you're into it to make the money, you're not going to make it until you move up the ladder. When you get your entry level position at a radio station, you're going to make a minimum wage and they're going to expect you to eat and sleep at that radio station. So that kind of thing, you definitely want to make sure you're prepped so that you can move up, right? That you have your voice, that you know where you're going to begin your break, you know where you're going to end your break, and that way you can just hit the button when you're done. Always keep your audience. Your audience should be in the forefront of your mind. You need to know who is listening to you. I know for 98 Rock, it's a guy between the ages of 35 and 54. That's, our target for our salespeople wants to be 25, but a lot of the younger ones have turned the radio off, at least for long periods of time.
Sure.
35 to 54 male is who I am talking to. Luckily for me, I like to video game. Luckily for me, I love rock music, so I can talk about all of it. I can even talk about heavy metal and death metal if I need to, which, not all dudes want to listen to. I'm not trying to stereotype here. And then I also like fast cars and trucks, right? So I already have a little bit of a bond, right? I rode a motorcycle for 20 years. That's why I gave you guys some stickers. Nobody can see them now, but there's a motorcycle on that. Right. And so I definitely was able to get a lot of inroads into our demographic where they're like, all right, she seems pretty cool. Let's, don't ever, ever, ever talk politics on the air unless you're doing a political show. But if you're doing music, don't talk politics. Talk about the music. Right. You should talk about some of your personal stuff, but nothing too personal. Like, I don't care that, your kid just did something. I just don't care. What does that have to do with, Led Zeppelin? It has nothing to do with Led Zeppelin. Robert Plant had a kid. I didn't see him talk about his kid and his music. You know what I mean? He did put his kids on a cover of an album, though. We'll leave it at that. Those are sort of the tips and tricks. Learn everything. Learn how to do production. Cool Edit, or that's not Cool Edit. Oh my God, I'm really dating myself. Oh my God. Audition, Adobe Audition should be your best friend.
Yeah.
You should be able to break things down, put them back together, know what the beats per minute are. You should be able to remix a song if you can, even though that's not really what it's made for. And then you also need to know your social pages inside and out. That is way more important. And even though the station has a social page. You should have your own for your own show that you can put your things on. That's where your personal stuff is going to go on. If you're out and about and you're with your kids, yeah, sure, put a picture up of your kid on the Facebook. And then you can direct people like, hey, if you want to see that, you can go look at it.
Yeah.
But don't make that, you know, your break. If there's a way to push people onto your social pages through your show, even better.
Tell me something about the radio industry that most people wouldn't know, for anybody listening, because we always love those cool stories.
Like I said, I've been doing it for so long. The studios are pretty cool. Yeah. You know, the equipment we get to use is really cool. Meeting your favorite band and having a chat with them is really, really cool. My least favorite thing to do is get on stage and bring a band on, just because it's, you know, I don't know. I don't feel like I belong up there. I don't play an instrument. I know I'm up there to make the stage announcements, everybody's favorite, and represent the station. I understand the reasoning behind it, and I never stand up there for very long, like, hey, and here they are, you know, that kind of a thing. But being able to see them backstage and go, hey, man, I love your music. And then, you know, because not a lot of people get that. I understand how it is that I get that opportunity and a lot of people don't. Trying to think of something else. Knowing that you have started a trend too. We had a guy, his name was Stash, and he made up his own words. And people would come up and use those words to him. And I thought, well, that's really cool. You know, if you can actually start a trend. One of the coolest things I've done at the radio station was when I first got there. And that was, and I know this sounds so grandiose, I saved the elephants at the Maryland Zoo.
I mean, that's a really important thing. Don't
yeah, well,
don't downplay
it. Yeah, I'm not downplaying it too much, but it was a long time ago. And that's why the elephants are still there. And that's another great thing for anybody that's just getting into the industry. If there's a way for you to do something in the community that has a massive impact like that, you are golden. You're golden for at least a decade. That's like the brownie points that everybody talks about with the boss, you know? And they're like, oh my gosh, well, look what she did. We raised $50,000. I slept at the zoo for an entire week. And if we tried to do that today, we couldn't. That's what kind of bums me out a little bit too. Promotion staffs have been, you know, downsized to nothing. And I remember when we did that back in 2003, you know, I had an entire staff that was bringing me dinner. You know, they'd set up a PlayStation for me. We had mattress people bringing in mattresses. Oh, she's got to be comfortable while she's there, you know, that kind of a thing. And it turned into a deal. We got a lot of media out of it. So yeah, those are that kind of thing. I still get a couple comments on, not so much, but it's, you know, knowing that I did something like that, and that's sort of my legacy, is really nice to rest my head on when I leave.
You know, my last question was going to be, what do you want your legacy to be in radio? But I think you've talked about it a couple of different times.
Yeah.
And I think it's that you've made a difference.
Yeah. Right?
Was that what you expected when you first got into radio? Or is it something that just evolved over time?
I expected t-shirts and free CDs, right? And, you know, it's insane. Like, looking, it hasn't really hit me yet either. I think we're doing a big concert at the Maryland State Fairgrounds on September 12th. And I think that's when it's going to hit me. That's when the waterworks are going to turn on. But I'm ready. I'm ready to make room for the young ones, because I do feel that the industry has changed so much that the opportunity just isn't there. And we've got a lot of people floating around in the background at the station that have been there for a long time, that have worked part-time shifts or, you know, are doing all kinds of other things. And I really want to give them an opportunity, because it took me a long time to get to where I was and to wait for people to go. I had to go travel around the country. They can't do that now. You know, so I'm hoping that when everything is said and done, you know, that people will remember me eventually. I know there's a woman, Sarah Fleischer. She was there for 40 years. People still remember her. They really do. Yeah. And I think, you know, I still have 6 months to go. So it depends on, you know, what big thing I'm going to do before I go. I did the public affairs program for a very long time. That was another great thing to reach out to the community and do nonprofit stuff too. So I'm going to continue to do that in my retirement years as well. And I'm sure I'll run into, oh, didn't you work for 98 Rock? I'm like, yeah, sure.
What do you think the future of radio looks like? I mean, obviously, you know, you're retiring, but it's not that hard to guess or to postulate, I guess. So tell me what you think the future looks like.
You know, it's a tough one. I think it needs to be regulated again. They need to go in and go, you can't own 250 radio stations. I'm sorry. We need to give radio back to the local voices. You know, the Federal Communications Commission gives out licenses that you're supposed to be the voice for the community. The community owns 98 Rock. They own our airwaves. Hearst doesn't own the airwaves. We have to file every year to keep that license, right? So I feel like if we can get back to that, that the future of radio would be a lot brighter than it is now. As it stands, companies like Clear Channel, which is now known as iHeart Music or iHeart Radio, they have pushed everybody onto their app, right? So streaming is where radio is going. And I get that, and that's great. But when that streaming is, it's once again taking jobs out of local markets. So you don't get a full, there's nobody that can walk into a radio station today and work the overnight shift. That's midnight to 6 a.m. when the morning show comes on. And that's where you get your chops. That's where you train. That's where you can make your mistakes, right? And where are the next voices coming from, right? And I bring this up to my bosses all the time. They're like, shut up, Amelia. We already know. There's nothing we can do about it. We don't own the... I'm like, no, but there's some things that you can, you know, poke, do some poking like I'm poking. Do some poking. Because I really want to hear fresh voices. Because I'm 57 years old. I sound like an old person, right? You know, granted, I've been around and maybe mom and dad raised somebody on 98 Rock, their child. But when they come up, they know bands that I don't even know about, right? We're not playing. We are in some respects, you know, the classics, Offspring, things like that. But I'm really kind of wondering where it's going to go myself. I can't look into the crystal ball. I think that for us, for 98 Rock in particular, we're owned by a company that only owns two radio stations. They really are focusing on keeping it local. They really want all of their day shifts, you know, all the way up until 7 o'clock at night from 6 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. They want to keep it local. They want to keep live people in studio. So if they can hold on to that and if more radio stations would follow in those footsteps, there might be a fighting chance. It really comes down to, do kids want to listen to radio, especially if they're being pushed to the stream? They're always being pushed to the stream. So yeah.
I think that's the thing, right? We have to find a way to evolve radio so that it still is something that's interesting, that provides the listener with something of value, right? That brings them in this digital world that we exist in. And is the answer to that. Podcasts that are more structured with like a radio show with a rundown and guests and music and things. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Podcasting's tough with the music though, because you don't pay ASCAP or BMI, right?
Right.
So that's going to be a really, really hard thing to overcome. And if that ever changes, radio better look out, because if podcasts can start doing this and playing whatever they want, you know, and it's also getting more and more niche. Right. Mm-hmm. It's almost like television, right?
Yep.
You know, our news, local news is taking a beating now too. So, you know, it's all about the money. It really is all about the money.
You know, it's funny because there's like Jack FM exists, right? And that's a radio station that if people don't know, doesn't have any DJs on it.
It's a computer in a closet. That's what we call it.
Right. But there's also no conversation. Mm-hmm. There's no interaction with the community. There's nothing local about it. Like even every area has its own local version of that station, but it's not what I expect from radio. And I think that's where radio will find its ability to survive in what it offers that other people don't, which is those interesting local voices, those interesting conversations that are happening about things in your area that matter, right? Your interactions with the community and that important legacy that you're trying to leave behind. All of that is where we find the power of radio and how it can still serve our communities today. And I think that's what we kind of have to lean into. I'm not you with 20 years in the industry, but...
Right. Well, 98 Rock, that's what we're hanging our hat on.
Yeah.
That's why we continue to excel. And we're about to turn 50, 98 Rock has been on the air for 50 years. It's been the same format, and it's always been a big contributor to, I call it a thread in Baltimore's fabric, right? We've always got that big, long, and now with the Orioles and the Ravens, granted, that's taken some of our music away from us, but it brings in new people to listen that wouldn't normally listen either. So, you know, I trust the powers that be at the station to keep it rolling like that. I don't think we're going to change anytime soon, but, you know, the Bay is going religious, right? They just flipped that format, and that was classic rock, and they played all music. They hardly ever talked, and so that's going to be gone for listeners. Clear Channel just fired thousands of people all across the country. I don't know how that affected DC at all, but I know it affected Baltimore, the Clear Channel stations in Baltimore. So going back to, we have to deregulate. In fact, if anybody's listening to this right now, reach out to your constituent or your Congress people or your local people and say, hey, what's up with radio? Why is this happening? I sure wish there was a local voice I could listen to.
And I think that's what I love so much about our students who come through here, who go out into the world and practice those skills in radio, is they're doing it at the most local of levels, right? Like when you are when you are talking to your local community about the things that are important on base and in the areas around your installation, that's really important to those people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might be the voice that community has access to.
Yep.
You know, when I, not to date myself, when I was in the Navy, AFN had like four channels, and obviously we have more channels now, but that was it. If we did RTV News, we were on it. We were on all those channels, right? So it's very local, and it is still incredibly important. And I think that's why those tips and tricks are so important to our audience from someone who's been through the industry as long as you have, because it's going to continue to exist. They can't make the airwaves go away.
No, right? They can't. They did do a shift, though. They shifted a whole bunch of stuff. I'm not an engineer. I wish I had my engineer here, Gary Plackmire. You ask that man one question, and he will give you an hour long the answer to it. But they are starting to shift some of that too. And who knows what's going to happen these days? Everything's up in the air right now.
So. Well, what are your plans? You mentioned a little bit briefly that you were getting ready to retire. You've been on the air for 30 years. Where are you going next?
I'm going to go travel around the country.
Love
that. My parents are aging too. So there's some of that, you know, for the young ones. When your parents start to age, you got to be there for them. They were there for you. So I'm going to be there for them. And other than that, I don't know. I'm going to relax. So
I think you've earned
relax.
It.
Thank you.
You've earned it.
Thank you.
Well, our famous last question that we tell all of our students to ask at the end of their interviews, I will ask you, which is, do you have anything else you want to add or anything we haven't talked to you about that you want to get out to our listeners?
No. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come here. I haven't been on the grounds of Fort Meade in a long time. I told you this off the air, even though we're not on the air. My dad was stationed here, you know, and so I grew up in Laurel. So it was just been a real treat to come back. I saw that the commissary is massive now. The PX is so big, and there's a hotel.
When I was a student here, the hotel was like a motel of four rooms or five rooms.
Right.
There's that giant hotel. I know.
Yeah, this place has changed, but thank you so much, and thank you for the questions too, and letting me talk about my experiences with your listeners.
You know, I never thought when I was been listening to your morning show for so long that I would sit across from the microphone from you, and it is a very rare treat for me as well. So thank you so much for coming in. It was a real pleasure to have you here. It's not often that you get to meet your heroes in your areas of communications, and I've gotten to do it in writing journalism, and now I've gotten to do it in radio journalism. So, Amelia, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
And best of luck in all that you do. It'll be sad not to listen to you in the radio every day.
Aw, shucks.
Yeah. <that's all> right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.